This lecture is brought to you by Knox Theological Seminary on iTunes U. Knox is a seminary in the tradition of the Reformation that exists to educate men and women to declare and demonstrate the gospel of Jesus Christ. Our prayer is that this teaching will be beneficial in your Christian life and ministry.
Today we will look at chapter 6 in your textbook, and we'll think about how to interpret special literary forms like metaphors or parables or allegories, things like that. And one of the things that we have to realize, one of the most important things that we can do, is to understand the genre of the text that we are reading. And so, for example, you'll sometimes hear people say something like, "Do you take the Bible literally?" You may have even asked that or been asked that. You might be surprised to say that when someone asks me, "Do I take the Bible literally?" I say, no. I say, I take the Bible in the way that the author intended it. And it's clear that the author did not intend for us to take some things literally. When Jesus says, "You are the salt of the earth," he doesn't mean for us to take that literally. He doesn't mean for us to go live in giant salt shakers and things like that. It's a metaphor. What he's saying is, you are like the salt of the earth in this way. You are a preservative. That's why you're like salt. It's not a literal thing that we should take literally. We just can't do that. And so one of the things that you have to do is, first of all, understand the genre that you're reading. If you're reading a parable, for example, you don't want to press every detail of that parable to mean some theological point. The parable means something, don't get me wrong, and there are a variety of ways that we can interpret parables. I'll talk about one of them in a moment. The parable means something, but not every single detail of the parable has some theological point. That was a mistake that some of the early church fathers made. They tried to make the ring in the story of the prodigal son a theological point, and make the shoes in the story of the prodigal son another theological point. That's not good reading. It's not interpreting the genre in the way that the author meant for it to be interpreted. So then let's just take one of these, a parable, and think about how then should we best interpret it. And you'll realize that there are a lot of different ideas about how parables should be interpreted. And if you wanted to read lots about parables, you can begin with an article in Dictionary of Jesus and the Gospels. There's a new edition of that, the second edition. And you're reading that Dictionary of Jesus and the Gospels, put out by InterVarsity Press again. And there's an article there on parables. It will help you to sort of get a sense of what's going on in parable research at this time. And it will also give you a bibliography of other things that you can read that will be very helpful to you. But for now, let's just think about how do we understand the parables. I find Craig Blomberg's analysis of the parables to be a helpful one. And what Blomberg says is that there are a variety of different kinds of parables. And so what we do is we look for the main characters, the main people in the parable. And so there are parables that have only one main person. There are parables that have two main people. One man built his house on the sand, the other man built his house on the rock. Blomberg would say that when we see those two main people, we should recognize that there are two main points. There's a man over here who builds his house on the rock, and there's a man over here who builds his house on the sand. And the point for us to understand, don't build your house on the sand, but build your house on the rock. And so Blomberg is trying to get us to understand that generally there are as many main points in a parable as there are main characters. So if there are three main characters, then we have to somehow understand that there may be three sort of points that are being made. And the parable is trying to tell us a big idea, but sometimes there are points pointing to that idea that will help us. So, for example, if we were looking at the parable of the unforgiving servant in Matthew 18, you would find that there are three main characters in there. There is the king. That's a very important person in that parable. There is the first slave who is forgiven of 10,000 talents, an enormous amount during that time. And then there is the second slave whom the first slave will not forgive. And so we look at those three main characters and we try to understand precisely what is going on there and try to understand what is it that this parable is trying to get me to understand. Now, that's one of the ways to help us understand the parable. But another thing that we should do is never forget to look back and understand the cultural context that we talked about way back in chapter 3. We want to understand the cultural context by realizing that when, for example, this king tells this man, "You owe me 10,000 talents," that's more money than the Roman government owned at that time. Nobody personally would have owed 10,000 talents. It's a joke that Jesus is telling. He knows that when he said there was this man that owed 10,000 talents, people would say, nobody owed 10,000 talents. He's telling us a story here, and he's using Hebraic overstatement to help us understand what's going on with this story. So understanding the background will often help you to pick out these little tiny things that seem perhaps insignificant when you read them, but then when you realize this man owed more money than anybody could have owed, that begins to help us understand why his being forgiven of that amount is so gigantic and why his refusal to forgive the second slave of a tiny, minuscule amount in comparison to what he was forgiven of is so... we can't understand why he would do that. That is understanding the parable in its first century context. And then we move forward to how the parable applies to us today. But we can't move forward to understand how the parable applies to us today until we first understood what it means in its first century context. And all of these special literary forms are like that. So whenever you see a simile, or a metaphor, or a proverb, or a parable, or an allegory, any of these things, think carefully that this is a different genre, and I have to pay special attention to it, because it's not the same as a historical story. The story of this man who was forgiven of 10,000 talents is not the same as the story of David killing Goliath. David killing Goliath means it's meant for us to be read as a historical story, that David actually did that. This parable is not meant to be read as a historical story. There really wasn't a man who owed 10,000 talents. This is a story that Jesus is telling these people to help them understand themselves. And so what the parable does, and I'll leave you with this, Emily Dickinson had a great line. She said, "Tell the truth, but tell it slant." And what she meant by that was, tell the truth, but tell it in such a way that it gets past the people's self-imposed defenses. So it's slant. It comes around that. That's what the parables do. They are truth told slant. They cause us to say, yes, this is an interesting story. And yes, this is right. This is what's going on. And then all of a sudden, in every parable virtually, there's this what's called in stress, or there's a shock at the end of the parable. And all of a sudden, you can see the readers or the listeners nodding along, nodding along, nodding along. And then all of a sudden, they say, no, wait a minute. Wait. It's as if Jesus is leading them along the garden path. And then at some point, he turns the garden hose on them. And they realize something incredible has happened here. So look for that in stress of the parable. Look for the way that Jesus is telling the parable slant. Ask yourself, what about this story would have made people want to kill Jesus? If you can find that, you're very close to finding what the parable means. So have fun reading this chapter and have fun reading the Word of God, because it has lots of wonderful things to say to us. And we'll see you next time.
These courses provide a glimpse into our academic programs. Knox students can take 1 week or semester-length courses in person at our South Florida campus or choose to complete a degree entirely online. By bringing together academic excellence, a vibrant community of learning, and flexible scheduling, Knox offers today's students timeless truth through modern convenience. For more information about earning credit toward a master's degree, please visit our website at knoxseminary.edu.